Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe. It's my delight to welcome you on behalf of my co-host, Emeka Onyeagwa. In today's episode, we're going to be looking at what we call the dire situation in Nigeria. And I think that that's enough of an introduction to today's episode. So, Emeka, you're welcome to this episode. And I can't say that I'm particularly excited by this subject, because this is a subject that touches me in a very personal way. And I'm sure from my conversations with you over the last few months, it's also something that touches you. And indeed, so many of our friends and relatives in a direct way. And I'm talking about the very, very dark economic times in Nigeria. And for me, no story illustrate this better than something that just happened to a second cousin of mine who lost her father-in-law, and within a week, her husband, who was in otherwise good health, her husband who had just lost his father, also suddenly died. And the speculation amongst our relatives is that this man simply was overwhelmed by the prospect of finding the money to bury his father. And perhaps in that kind of predicament, the financial predicament of, you know, looking for money to do a funeral, that he just, you know, couldn't hold it together, and he also died. So now, instead of one funeral, this poor second cousin of mine is going to be thinking of two funerals, that of her husband as well as the her father-in-law. So It's occupied my conversations with relatives back in Nigeria. And this, in a lot of ways, underscores how difficult it is for people to find a meal to eat, for people to feed their families. Another story which went viral a couple of weeks ago was of a man who killed his son, his only son, because he came home and his son had eaten the last meal which the man was looking forward to eating. And the man just killed his son, you know, a grown son of his. I don't think that Nigerians have had it this bleak, this dire. And so in today's episode, you know, we're going to be talking about what... where are things going to go from here in terms of how people respond to this, in terms of how government responds or doesn't respond to this, perhaps in terms also of the social conditions in the country? You know, are we going to see a continuing spike in criminality as people try to cope? So anyway, so those are my opening thoughts. And I'd like to hear your own thoughts, Emeka.
Yeah, well, I mean, these stories are—it's very interesting. I mean, it's very interesting because you start from the reality that there are global economic crisis. Yes, that's a fact. You have to put that caused by a number of factors. You can people like to ad lib some or add to the other, but there's been a whole shift in there's a supply crisis here in America. You have a lot of goods that have gone up, haven't come down. So even though inflation has slowed down, you still have you're still paying. I mean, basic stuff. Basic example: used to get low grade eggs for about $2 and some change for a pack of a dozen eggs. Low-grade eggs, generally, at least in most places, maybe like 3-something. Even the ones you used to get for 2 now, you're talking about 4 or 5. Eggs generally are about $10, to be honest, for a pack of 12. So imagine if you use that as your barometer. I think that's one way to, that's one way that you can use to measure some of those things. What the cost of your staples? What drives pricing? I know something people that talk about are very aware of. Listening to people like Adewumi Adesina, who was the former agricultural minister under Jonathan, I believe came in, during Jonathan, and is now in, talked about the same thing, the same metrics on 5% of the costs of the rising costs, foodstuffs, basics, essentially. Listening to, I don't know what award it was yesterday, the governor of Niger State was also paying homage, I think, to what Peter Obi said while he was there as well. So people, when it's come down to the lower denominator, so that's the backstory to it. Globally, there is a financial crisis. In Nigeria, it's a lot worse. You can debate there are economic challenges, let's put it that way. You can debate what's created that. People talk about pandemic, supply chains, which really is a key driver in some of those things. Some people talk about people saved more during the pandemic and disposable income. I think it contributed, but I disagree with that. That was the biggest driving factor. I think it did contribute. There was also the reality of some companies just started to profit a lot more. But those are the factors in which they haven't done their earnings calls. So you go there, you listen to their earnings calls. Why charge more? Because they sell it in the US Congress, all those kind of things. In Africa, it's a lot worse. And it's simplified by, in Nigeria specifically, it's a lot worse. Of course, anybody out here feels it because your expenditure has gone up. In my case, for instance, it's going up, not just because the size of my household has increased, but also because everything around has increased. I can't even tell you how much, because in the span of 3 years, my household has increased in size, right? So that's only personal level. But anybody's level, I think. So you get to Nigeria, and it's not a question of what's happening. Economic factors, the people that captured power, not voted in, didn't win an election. They went in and they did everything in their power and to get that office, and they're in there, and they don't know what to do. Both with the factors that were the prevailing winds of Nigeria ever since democracy came in, which Obasanjo and Jonathan and Yar'Adua were good at stemming the tide. And what did they, what was stemming the tide? Maintaining stability in the financial markets. They were good at it. Profits, lots of solutions here and there, but nothing to solve the whole problem of Nigeria. You have to solve the problem of Nigeria to solve Nigeria growing economically, creating wealth. But they were able to just at least stem things. People were, you have a house here, you can maybe sell your house, add some money, move overseas, or overseas, those kind of things. You were able to get back. Since those guys left, but I did not care about these things. His major aim was to get to power and demagogue people, joining forces with the guy that captured power right now, to demagogue people and jump in. And demagogue is Nigeria's favorite target, the Igbos, or the Igbo lands. Even if you are a man, you look Igbo, you are Igbos. Mm-hmm. Demagogue people are maintaining power, and this is what they've done with new ideas. So it's getting to the point that Nigeria's interest on the debts. And again, we can debate, people talk about this thing, but the reality is Nigeria has more foreign exchange coming in than its expenditure. So all you need to do is maintain that flow. And a good part of 20-30% of the foreign exchange coming in is the diaspora. That's a huge part of it. So all you have to do is maintain what your passenger did, and this thing, they saved some of their money here and there, they left the country, with million prospects, and this guy was claiming that they didn't know that, they didn't maintain the budget accounts. And now we have a situation where Nigeria's entire income is not even enough to cover the interest on his debt. And it's not on the global economic crisis. So what's happening? The Naira is a free flow. Part of their policies was to free float into it. Part of their policies was to free float them, complete free float, which they tried before in 2004, the Naira went in a couple of months, $100 to $1. Now they jumped almost $2,000 to $1, almost I think $1,900 or something. I think it's back to about $8,600. Incomes are plummeting. Middle class is disappeared long since. So you have a situation where it sounds like a horror movie. This all leads to but you have a situation where people are begging to be able to eat once a day. I was talking to a friend and he said a full meal in Nigeria now is something called gari, soaking gari. For those who don't know what gari is, you could Google it real quick. There's something called soaking gari where you put water inside the gari and you put peanuts, actual peanuts inside the gari. You make maybe a cup, think of a drinking cup. I don't know what the full meal is, so if you did a quick Google, you do a good quick check, that should give you an idea if you don't know what that means. It's a full meal for people in Nigeria, for people who have dependents to feed. That's what we're feeding kids. These are what you would call here like the middle class in America, understand? This is what they are eating. You can use the analogy in America, think of the lowest kind of meal that you could find. Think of the sugar meal. Think of any sugar meal. That's what people are struggling to try and eat maybe sometimes once a day. It's a food meal for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, supplements. And other people are going through. It's crazy. Obviously, I have more stories. But I'm just giving an outlook on it's a new fabric. Okay, this is the trend. This is where it's coming. So this is where it is. You're giving a guy who's absolutely clueless. In addition to what do we even start with these guys? One thing to capture power with all your antecedents.
Yeah.
It's another thing that when you occupy this office, I don't even think he has captured it because you have, if you had watched yesterday, the awards still having, you know, Peter and the guy still certainly won. And there's something more like this thing, you go on social media, and people are calling that Peter to come on the problem.
Yeah.
That's the same people that were engaged in ethnic divisions to win, promoting these things, the ones going with them out to say, hey. And in addition to that, there's also the suppression of the youths for so many reasons, which, you know, we'll get into. But that's the outlook, man. A lot of today's stories, it sounds like a horror movie. But I'm sure if you ask anybody out here that knows anybody, and we always say you know them, I'm talking about your family members. I'm talking about people who are just in contact with maybe even distant relatives. Maybe you visited Nigeria and you exchange phone numbers, exchanged social media account handles like we do nowadays. And there are people are reaching out to you. People you haven't seen in 20, 30 years are reaching out to you looking for help.
Absolutely. So what you said is so apposite, you know, to call it a horror movie. And the point you just made about people coming out of your past, your dim past, you know, so I just got contacted by somebody I had not seen in 40 years. You know, somebody I had not seen in 40 years. And he just reached out, and it was predictable. He needs financial help. And this is coming from so many different quarters at once, you know. And already, for somebody like my wife and me, we're already, as it were, you know, stretched because of their relatives, you know. If you are conscious at all, then you know so many poor relatives, impoverished relatives around you, so many acquaintances who can make ends meet. So we've been, over the years, you know, helping out, sending some people to secondary school, to university, and so on. And so for people who, at least up until now, were reasonably members of the middle class in Nigeria, to reach out to you and to ask for help for feeding, it's a new territory that we've entered, and is, as you rightly said, is horror territory. Yeah, so you've made the point about, you sort of laid out the global context to this, excuse me, the global economic crisis, as it were, and you've done a good job of instantiating the version of it that is happening in America. You know, you and I happen to be men who love to cook. And so part of loving to cook is that you have to go, because, you know, when I cook, I like to go to the shop and get the ingredients myself. And so I'm very much aware in America of the increases, some of them quite significant, of the price of groceries, right? And yet, you know, you use the example of eggs, you know, eggs, a dozen eggs that you could have got before for $2, $2.50, now it's close to $3.99 or something, essentially $4. But in Nigeria, to underscore the point you made about the horror scale of what's going on in Nigeria, the best way that I illustrate it when I speak to audiences in America, and I was just giving a talk last week about religious persecution in Nigeria and its economic underpinnings, right? So the fact that it just is astonishing for me that March of last year I was in Nigeria, and I met people who were complaining that a bag of rice was 8,000, 10,000 naira in March. I went back to Nigeria in October. It had risen to 55, inching towards 60,000. Then I went in January. It was, you know, 60-something thousand. And so a few days ago, I was talking to somebody, and I was saying, yeah, I hear that a bag of rice is now close to 70,000. And the person said in some places it's 80,000. So this is not the territory of egg that jumps from 250, 299 to 399, right? Mm-hmm. This is a quadrupling, not even quadrupling. It's a factor, a price that rises 7 to 8 times. You know, from 10,000 to now close to 80,000 naira for a bag of rice. And this does not account for tomato, fish, meat. It does not account for other things that people have to spend their incomes on. And in a country where the minimum wage, again, it's important to underscore that the minimum wage in Nigeria is 30,000 naira. Much of what we and by the way, there are lots of states in Nigeria, I don't know how many, but there are lots of states that don't pay that 30,000, that are still stuck paying 20,000, 22,000, which was the former minimum wage. And then you find, at the point that you raised, the sharp, dramatic devaluation of the naira, right? So that by the middle of last year, you could still get 650, 700 naira. You could still get 650 for $1, right? And suddenly now you are in the territory of 1,800 and so on. Where much of what we consume is imported. This is unsustainable. And then all the hopeful strides in the power sector. Again, anecdotally, I was in Nigeria in March of last year. I stayed with a relative in Antony village, and he had power about 18 hours a day, okay? I went back in October. He had power for about 22 hours a day. So it was great stride. I went back in January, and suddenly the thing had tipped in the other direction. They were lucky if they had up to 4 hours of electricity. So you wonder, how can a country's industrial capacity, even if Nigerians had everything else ready and the will to begin to do more domestic production of what is needed in the country, how can you even sustain an industrial capacity when, you know, you have such fitful and epileptic supply of power? And not, I guess, ultimately we're going to get to the point of the government's blaming of cryptocurrency firms for the misfortunes of the Naira. And I'm sure that, you know, you understand the crypto environment a lot more than I do. So I don't know if you want to jump in there.
The main thing to emphasize is that we don't create wealth. We don't create, like we always reiterate, it's a cake. Mm-hmm. It's a static cake. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very difficult to make people that haven't experienced it or have lost contact with it to understand how it works. It really is very difficult. I saw the high explosion sometimes, most times, not all the time, to even know if we spend time growing up in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And I explained, like, this is a zero-sum game. You really don't get it. It is. I think we were talking with Toy Fala last year on the Money Podcast, and I was talking about how, you know, they'll start you when you succeed to a certain degree. They'll call upon you and say, you've used other people's their luck. You've taken their fortune to succeed. Yes. So now you have to pray and don't follow. And, you know, it's very, very, very different, but it's very true.
Yes.
This is how people think. And even if they don't call family, because we'll give you a voice that socially grew up in Lagos, don't have that kind of, you can't call into family instead of saying, no. But that's the way they feel.
Destiny.
That's the way I saw my father get treated. Mm. So I understand that. I think we really get treated. So tomorrow, my father's family is responsible for a large amount of his family, almost literally everybody. But he doesn't get any of the credit. Doesn't get that credit because as far as they're concerned, not only doesn't he deserve it, he didn't do enough. In America and the UK shows that he didn't do enough. That's evidence. So it sounds like a very good, but something that people need to understand. It means a good deal in the way people think. And because that is what carries on. And you're like, you have educated, trust me, that's a whole different episode. They are the vampires in Nigeria, especially when they are able to consistently stay overseas and imbibe, not just say multiple, just say it through the system, but imbibe real knowledge. Yes, you need those people, you need the things you want us. The idea of these people that really hear them speaking, that they imbibed knowledge. Yes, you'd find them all over, but Nigeria is not run by those kind of people. Those kind of people that are still in Nigeria. The kind of people that are still in Nigeria and run things are people that don't create anything. And that's not the problem. That's what leads out to this thing. So let me emphasize that. Because what I heard, what I'm talking about, it's always hard to describe it to somebody in America. Minimum wage is not a real thing as a whole, but it's not supposed to be a real thing. It's not even death in the people from Nigeria. I think that's so. Because a minimum wage job is not in the starter job.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you start getting your feet on it from us in the workforce, paperboard, bad and greasy summer. That's a grown adult.
A waiter.
Or somebody has 30 years showing should only start their salaries with. Right? Mm. So I'm not emphasizing that to show that in terms of just to show that there's a fixed cake. And with the fixed cake and with these people in power, they don't have ideas. You can try and say this or say that, or their supporters can say this. Mm-hmm. In fact, they came out the other day and after, there's no labor in Nigeria. When I say labor, there's no labor congress. There's no workers in Nigeria, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So they came out and claimed they weren't even a protest.
Yeah.
I was showing on TV the other day, and he said he came out, and then after one day, let the protest not end up in the smoke, and for those who don't know, the smoke is the seat of power turned down the street, White House, whichever the seat of power you want, claiming the seat of power. In the future of doing that with the affairs. And you know, I'm like, no, it's not going to happen. And, you know, he said, well, you know, that's what happened. So you have no people's power in Nigeria. And they don't need to, they don't care. I'm stressing all this to make sure you understand that the people are there and there to take the honest advice of the take. They've been there for you, they need to tell you. So to assess your enemy, so to assess your enemy, so they can maintain power. They're there for me. I want that there to have the policies because I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And people that tell you, well, Lagos, then I beg, that's a whole different, a whole episode of why Lagos is the most performance that you can find it. Maybe the most fullness. It looks shiny, but it's anything but. So a lot of these guys, no ideas. One day they announced they lifted the vision of Qatar. Next day, Qatar's come up and say that never happened. Next day, they'll come and claim, make another claim. You know, they're getting $3 billion loan to fix supply. They never even, I think people even seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have ideas. I expect all this to get to exactly what you're talking about. Binance, cryptocurrency, it became their father. Now, you know, those who understand the crypto world, so those who understand the story, at this point, you're probably laughing. Because you probably heard the story. And you should laugh because it's the biggest comical joke that you can find. But if you understand, you only need to adjust that. I mean, I think you're just taking a minute to adjust that. It's funny. But I believe you don't understand. In essence, cryptocurrencies are digital money. Yes, if you don't understand what digital money is, or you want to say it's magic money and it's giant nonsense, I understand. I'm personal for you. But just totally understand that the last part of money circulation is no longer physical paper. If you understand that point, the last part of money circulation is actually digital. There is a ledger, that's all you can just put your ledger in current zeros. Whatever it is. It doesn't work that way. Which, by the way, the one guy in the distance said, oh, we love their print money with this. It seems to me, they printed some money, but it's not about printing money, it's not dependent. If you print money, it takes some out of circulation. So, but there's no proof that they took them out of circulation or not. I don't, the central bank in Nigeria is supposed to manage the government banking. Let me give you an example as an aside of how crazy it is. If they can look up at any point in time and close down any bank and take over the bank, they're not bound to do that. They don't even want to write that thing down. So if the same thing with the MMT in Nigeria, which is the major bank of foreign exchange into Nigeria, new audits, new involved in CIA, some defense department in America, the defense department in America does not generate wealth. It generates things for money. It does not generate wealth. Yeah, that was like, and there's no audit whatsoever. They know what they're doing, they know how they're doing it. So they try to do their own digital currency, right? So digital currency is essentially just pure, this thing that can move. The essence of a digital currency that people need to understand is that it's something that is not supposed to be controlled by the government. Mm-hmm. Even when the government does have their stable coins that are either pegged to the government, there's digital dollar, they tried, it didn't work. Nigeria tried his own digital currency. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this whole thing to me, that's what it's like. Cut to the chase. They have no ideas, and they see the young ones in Nigeria. It's like, how this my boy could they chop? He thinking like, I remember means. The older, like, a lot of families, right? If you, in Nigeria, a lot of families, if you are the younger one and you get better income, you are expected to settle your older ones first.
Yes.
Before you can enjoy the dividends from your own. So this is where these guys are still difficult. How people would be like, I'm like, this is a real thing.
Yes.
If you want peace to your family. They're expected to be wrong. Thank you, Lord. You're putting yourself in your parents' self, might be, will be the ones instigating, no, how you buy a house, and we don't have a house. So, right? This is a very normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they see, and the way they want to push deeds, is the way they know that. Cryptocurrency trading, which is more legitimate than anything the banks are doing for a fact, because you can only point to, oh, they are this character or that characters. Yes, but that's not what they are crypto, right? No, they can point to hype, advice currencies, all that stuff. So they saw this, they said that Binance had paid in some money, had paid regulators fines in Australia, Britain, and the US.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why they paid this fine. There's a reason why those things happen. Mm-hmm. You have to understand this financial system. The reason why crypto itself was even invented, why this white paper was put forth, why Bitcoin, the anonymous, why Satoshi, and Paul finally got their way in 2011 by fully launching Bitcoin, 2012 and then 2011. Part of that was decentralization of currency. Even after the Iraq wars and the distance, people just went and they came up with all this equation. So when you see cryptocurrencies, it inherently is supposed to be giving financial power to people. It has its problems, but it's largely a younger people's thing. Honestly, I'm telling you, you have a lot of people in 50s, 60s, 70s that, you know, Bitcoin is a thing. It's only more than myself, actually. Some of them just bought Bitcoin on your way. They made a killing from it. So, I'm telling you, but it's largely like, I mean, I'm sure I have a lot of people who are doing currency trading through cryptos. Crypto is the one that lost. A lot of these young guys are not doing crime, they're not committing anything, they're not part of any kind of law breaking activities. I think it's from trading crypto, which you can not be sure, but it inherently is not breaking or doing anything. So that's what they all have been doing. So
again, because you and I were talking about this recently, and as I confess to you, I'm not knowledgeable at all when it comes to crypto, right? So that and I know that a lot of our followers are very young people, so they understand the language you're speaking, they understand the context out of which your analysis is proceeding. But for those who don't, for those who are like me, right, You said that Binance was paid fines in Australia, the US, and Britain. Could you explain why they had to pay that and whether there is any connection with Binance's operations in Nigeria?
So what happened in this country, in essence, right, is you had regulators coming and say, hey, you guys can't do this. This is magic money, not funny money, you know.
So, and you're talking about regulators in America or in Nigeria?
The big one you want is the worst regulators in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The worst regulators are in the U.S.
Okay.
So they came in. They said it's funny money, there's blah, 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 there's manipulation, there's this. They made all sorts of claims. So what the biggest ones you've had leading up to that, because it's really extensive, the biggest ones you've had leading up to this was in New York, funny enough. New York especially when they came in with the new attorney general, she went after a lot of these people, Letitia James,
yeah.
So New York became the anti-financial country. So in essence, they made all these charges, cryptos, that. A lot of young people, Charlie Young, jumped on crypto. Mm-hmm. But in essence, the only thing that was at play, which I've shown this week with the, well, not this week, actually, this month, last month, rather, with the eventual listing of crypto on the New York Stock Exchange on an ETF, that's an electronic trust fund, meaning you put a bunch of things inside the fund and then they take your money, they, you know, is that eventually the SEC, first things first, chased these guys around and it made it difficult for crypto to fully function in America. It does function in communities. The danger of crypto is still America, right? Mm-hmm. But same offerings. So anybody can look up and get a protocol or create crypto. You know, I keep it interesting. So let me make it very technical. In that sense, what every crypto coin, there are about 4,000 or 5,000 crypto coins, aims to go into an area and solve a problem. And if you can have a crypto coin from this podcast.
Yes.
Create a crypto coin, right? Mm-hmm. And the application of the coin is that every time you watch a listing, you're buying one outside the listing coin. Mm-hmm. That's it. You can create an estimate, right? You listen with one estimate. Now, we can create 15 million of the altcoins. The altcoins is worth nothing, right? But is it? It can now be driven by the value the podcast itself can create. So if you have more people wanting to engage, the value of the coin, the spending of the coin, the more the value goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's stuff called tokenomics, how many you print, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So in essence, you go into places where.
And it's all
digital.
It's all digital.
You know, you create, and then you also create an application on top of these coins.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times your coins are created on top of other applications, maybe Bitcoin or Ethereum or something. So in that sense, it's really to some degree, to a large degree, is also creating things that traditional banking can't even serve. Mm-hmm. And the governments know it because you have traditional banking families and all these things that they like them. But so, people are able to just...
Is that why... governments feel on the whole threatened, and why governments increasingly in the US, in Europe, are talking about getting into the crypto domain because governments want control. You know, governments want to have almost exclusive control of the means of violence in any society, of the means of exchange in any society, at least those two and even some, right? So if a bunch of private actors get together and they create this different way of doing transactions, you know, that ignores government and its regulations and regulators and so on. The government freaks out, right? And wants to bring these people back, or wants to basically take this new domain and bring it within its regulatory province again, you know? So it looks like that's why, are you saying that that's why the government perhaps went after Binance and said, hey, you're creating this mythical, magical money. And so you're going to have to pay
fine.
Yes. Mm. But they were not proscribed. Mm. They were not stopped from operating, right? So were they spared that particular penalty? Were they because crypto people had some kind of legal authority to continue to do business, or why didn't the government shut them down, for example?
The government, why anywhere? They can find you for breaking their laws, right? Which they did. Mm-hmm. Most of those things help depress the price of crypto, amongst other things as well. Mm-hmm. So another thing people have to understand with cryptos, because the crypto should be is the communities. So the way it's structured and the way it's designed and the way the programs are regulated, or typically, even the most of them are supposed to be quote unquote decentralized. Mm-hmm. But the way they are written is that you can trace the movement of it. Any can open new studies on this. Bitcoin, a green, these Bitcoin, Ethereum, you know, some of the bigger small coins that are there. And growing up things, Matic, Ada, that are growing on ecosystems. But you can open their ledgers and let them have their browsers and everything. You can trace the entire history already of the coins. It's the entire history. If they want to go back, you can trace it. In fact, one of the things that already has that mechanism that if you claim the history on the dark web. So for those that don't know, there's something called the dark web. The dark web is where you have all the shady stuff. If you need a different browser to get something, it works by torrents, meaning that you can't really track anything. Websites typically don't even like to work on the dark web. So it's a very different ecosystem for different things. If you want to do anything like killing somebody or whatever, that's where you go. If your coin has been used to pay on the large exchange, you won't even take it. Mm-hmm. You know, like the reputation and all that. And there are bad exchanges like Freed and Kogan Coin and stuff like that. But in that sense, the government did find them. Also they broke SEC regulations, whatever. They tied them in court for years. They tied the Bitcoin ETF in court for years. Mm-hmm. And then finally, is it like, when was it, October or November? October, I think. They stopped fighting the case. Mm-hmm. By that time, it showed that a lot of people had bought a lot of the big. Another thing you have to understand, most cryptos are deflationary. Real cryptos, by design, a deflationary. What does that mean? It's not a finite amount of supply. Bitcoin is 21 million coins, which every Bitcoin is not broken down into smaller coins. Kind of like you have a dollar, you break it down to cents, kind of like that. But you can break it down even into more because it's all in numbers. So it's decimals, 0.00000000. Then break it into millions and dollars that you think of.
That's right.
So the government, you could see that from the wallets, a lot of big, what they are called is wolves, institutional investors, came in and bought a lot of the cryptos, especially the bigger ones, which is where a lot of the smaller ones build their protocols on. So when I say protocols, you have like, if you wanted to do a outside means of coin, most likely will build a bigger protocol. Mm-hmm. And already existing system, why? Because it's like easier to integrate the system and integrate the platforms with that. To start from scratch, it's not even about just the expenses. Mm-hmm. It's also the fact that you want people to be able to interchange your coins. And it's a protocol, it's a computer program. The money itself is purely a computer program. Mm-hmm. Very neat computer program. One in the system exchange and go get something called like a hard drive, but something called a wallet. You can take it off your wallet, or the exchange, push the wallet, take it to the travel symbols, push the exchange, leave it up there. Like, which the digital money you can apply up and down. It's a very, it creates a very unique signature. Every single one of them. Now, there are so-called new clients that are just produced endlessly. But, you know, there are all kinds of these things you can do. But you have to understand, the main thing you're asking is, well, if they find them for this and that, tie them up in court, then they don't tie them up in court anymore. So they give them the... In places like America, you can... The rules of being corrupt are different. You can take for one hand and slow somebody down, still come at the back and give it to them. So Binance, Steve Lee, is the founder of Binance, had stepped down, whole different world. Binance is only, as a nature of crypto, Binance is a company that has no office, no recognizable employees, as in crypto. But in essence, the charge in the US was okay, oh, you are trading secure. Okay, the technical charge in this thing is that, what is the definition of a crypto? Is it a security? So a security is like, a security is something you have to, is highly regulated, right? They said they are just coins. The SEC was saying they're securities. It ended up somewhere in between what you guys can be treated as securities. Also, they don't find as trading securities. Securities are parts of enterprises that you trade. It's like a security, it could be a company, other things. That is security essentially, right? So they said, you guys are trading part of an enterprise. And they're like, no, we're building a community. In some cases, they got them already done. And that's what they found them for. They found them for saying, hey, you guys, you guys are essentially stock trading. That a crypto is a stock, it's not a fund. That's what they had before. But the judges said that it came from, like, I don't know, you can exchange it for value, but it's not a pure security, not a pure stock. Mm-hmm. So that was the whole distinction. So they got fined for that. The fine was more the novelty on how crypto should be defined. How it's, in essence, what you're talking about, how they can control, or when you ask someone, how they can control crypto. The Nigeria case is different.
Yes. So
they are looking up to say, hey, I have to go through that. I told you, apologies, right? The Nigeria case is the idea to say, well, crypto is the price of the deflation of the Naira. Yes. The reason our Naira is being down is because all these little kids.
Yes.
What it means, how so? Yes, you have a Naira, you never produce any evidence, by the way.
So can you explain to our listeners the allegations that the government have made against Binance and crypto, broadly speaking? And then why, as you said, those who understand the crypto environment find it to be the most comical joke ever?
Yeah, because in essence, you're saying Binance, which by the way, in Nigeria and for the most part, is a peer-to-peer platform. What that means is, hey, I live in the US, I have dollars, right? Mm-hmm. You live in, let's put it like this. I live in the US, I have New York dollars. You live in Connecticut, you have clinical dollars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody lives in London, they have £1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to exchange my money on the platform. I don't like Western Union, but because I have to use Western Union because these currencies are issued in the case of the dollar with the good faith of the people of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's there, right? The United States government. That's what's there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And they will not let you wake up and say, hey, I want to exchange my, which, you know, the value of a dollar in New York is different from the value of a dollar in Chinese.
They
won't be in America. So, but that's not, you know, they don't let you say, hey, I want to exchange my £100. Who wants $100? Or who wants £100? Like, you can have people, like, good example. Practical world example. people post new things in different places. Things going on, right? You could be in Nigeria, which is more likely the case. Your kid is going to school in London, going to school in America, and you want to pay school fees, and you're like, I have 5 million now. I need to pay. I'm looking to buy £5,000. Who wants 5 million? Who wants 5 million in Nigeria? But instead, everything is gone through an exchange, not Western Union, not business on the road, nothing. In this case, it's cryptocurrency. It has nothing to do with the government. It's decentralized. You are your own bank. Your wallet is your bank. So you don't have any government to go to. You use your wallet. That's all. There's no internet number to call. That's you. Yeah. So you, when you want to exchange, you go on an exchange and you look at what people are changing for. And you can get, oh, okay, this is what the value is today. Let me change. You can say, no, this is not what I'm changing for. You set your value. Anybody that wants to buy at this value, pay, and I'm good. And you go to sleep. And anybody that wants to buy, buys. Is that for you? Is it peer-to-peer exchange? Nobody outside is setting value and what it is. So, yes, when you change all those things, you can also change it to Naira. But the value they use on Binance is the value that either the government sets to change to Naira. But in most cases, they use the value that the market sets because they've always had. So they don't have a say setting what the value is. So they don't just do that thing. They don't even want your Naira. What Naira is abused on the exchange when they have to change on the fintech apps that will change into this thing. But on the global scale of it, you want the dollar, you want the pound, you want the euro, you want more kind of denial. What do you do with it? What value is it? But they do have it because to a lot of exchanges, Nigeria is the second largest customer, selling Binance, the second largest exchange platform because a lot of young people realize this is trading. You trade today, I can trade with you $20 today for a nine, for instance, and tomorrow is $30. Okay, I make some money. And that's the thing about trading, arbitrage, whatever you do, you know, whichever way you grab at it. In currency trading, there are those avenues to make money. Especially if you have nothing else being right, it is very stressful though. Extremely, I wouldn't advise anybody that kind of thing, but you know, if you have something else doing, obviously, it's like day trading. But see, so in currency trading, so a lot of people are involved in doing that. And that's why the Nigerian government came up and started claiming that we're buying sets. Binance doesn't set. When you want to change your dollars, first thing first, you have to change out of the crypto to dollars. You have to get, you know, there are pairs, they pair all these things, they're different. It's not every crypto you can change for all the cryptos, not every crypto you can change for, but typically you can change for the big dollars and pounds and euros, typically. And if you're there, you can change to Naira. So the pairs you have for Naira is typically Naira, so typically, you have to go to Binance and check whatever. I don't think have any Naira pairs, aside from dollars and this thing. You have to change first to dollars and from dollars to Naira. And the value that you typically use is what the black market sets. It's got nothing to do with them. What you pay for is what you pay for. And what the market sets is what people in Nigeria will pay for. Demand and supply is that simple. It's got zero to do with crypto. They said they arrested like 2 Binance officials. I don't know what they found this. It's a little bit very complex, but it's very laughable. Because if you've been able to grasp a large part of this, then either I did a good job or, I did. But it's easy to catch somebody like this and blame them because the elite in Nigeria, the average Nigerian, most people don't understand how this works. They just don't. They don't care. It's fun money.
So I guess that in the end, If Binance was responsible for this wild slide in the value of the Naira, right? Then by emasculating Binance, then the Naira should bounce back. right? So that's how we're going to test to see if this alleged culprit is actually behind all the misfortune dogging the Naira in the last, since Tinubu seized Aso Rock.
Yep. Right? Yep. So they came out on the media and said this, said that, then they had some of those their favorite slander machine.
Yeah.
Came out, didn't call it the guy's name. But it came out slandered. But yeah, right. I mean, it's just a basic thing. If you've registered the money from the exchange, you saw them. If I smell you, I've got to your things. They've got the truth. They want the interest in, they love the Nigerian customers, obviously, but they want the Nigerian customers to be fine.
Yeah, it seems to me, you know, because even Governor Obaseki, right, 2 years ago, came out and flat out said that the central bank was printing money, that the central bank was lending the Buhari administration every month money that was printed out of thin air, and that the monies that were being distributed amongst Nigeria's 36 states and to the federal government was essentially magical money, money that had no backing, that had no productive capacity behind it, just money that is printed. And it seems to me that if that had happened over time, you know, much as one isn't an economist, when you have too much of something, that thing loses value, right? So that when the government keeps just printing Naira and, you know, just basically throwing it into the system, then you have too many people with this worthless Naira. The only sort of stable value they can find with all that money is to convert that worthless pile of Naira into the dollar or into the pound sterling or into some other currency. And so they have too much of one, which is basically useless. They want to have some stability of value, so they are trying to buy into a currency that has some staying power, hence dollar, hence pound sterling, hence euro. And so all these politicians, all this, their contractor friends have this slush bags of money. And, you know, there isn't enough dollar, there isn't enough euro, pound sterling. And so this, in a sense, in a, you know, sort of commonsensically, is what is happening, you know. Because, you know, I mean, we're seeing civil servants, and a lot of people have that, are facing that predicament. In fact, a friend of mine, who is a fairly successful businessman in Nigeria, was just telling me when I was home that he knows he's not in that situation because, you know, he was a successful businessman in America and went back to Nigeria. So he tells me that every month, actually, he brings in some dollars and he pays himself 6 million naira for the month, for, you know, for his upkeep, and then brings in some more money to pay his staff. So, but he told me that he knows friends who kept much of their money in Nigeria, and they have wards, children who are going to school abroad, and they are not able to pay their school fees because suddenly they found out that all these billions of naira they had lost more than half of his value, you know. So the country is screwed on both sides. On the one hand, which some people on TikTok, on social media, the point they've made, that Nigeria is still, in a sense, a good place if you have a certain quantity of money. I watched somebody on social media who said that for 1,000 naira, 1,500 naira, that you can still eat rice and eat pomo and maybe get some plantain, you know. And yet this is less than $1 there is no place, I don't think, in America where $1 can buy you even a plate of rice. You know, forget this, the sauce, forget any fish or meat or something. But this guy's point is, with 1,500 naira, you can still eat in Nigeria. The other point is, how many Nigerians can afford 1,500? You know, my wife and I have an elderly white man whose cat died last week. And we helped him to go give the remains of the cat to the Humane Society, where it was cremated. And so recently I went to get him the certificate. Well, he paid $65 for the cremation, and he wanted the paw of the cat as a sign to be put on a certificate that was given to him. That cost him $35. So $95 basically to bury your dead cat. And we were saying, well, $95, how much is it now? That's 100 and maybe 140,000 naira.
Ish.
Yes. Around there. That will feed some families in Nigeria for several months.
You and I,
you just made the point, right? That a lot of Nigerians now, what they eat is gari with granite, right? Peanut.
Yeah.
Well, granite, we call it peanuts, American. Yep. We call it, right?
Yeah.
A lot of American and a lot of Nigerians drink it. That's food for them. So if you're able to buy a bag of gari, and you buy some canned tomatoes, and you know, you buy what they call azu fridge, you know, frozen fridge fish, right? I think that you'll be able to. I mean, of course, a family won't finish a bag of rice. A good bag of rice.
That's all you're eating. More than that, right?
Yeah. And by the way, whenever I talk about the price of rice, right? For me, it's really painful, because I remember when I was growing up, rice was something you ate on Sundays. So you look forward. We look forward to rice, to Sunday, because that was the day we ate rice, right? With a little tiny bit of beef, or you know, a little bit of chicken legs, you know. And suddenly, rice just took off and became an everyday thing in Nigeria, and took off as a staple that Nigerians eat sometimes without any kind of protein. So when I go to Nigeria, you look at people, right? You take Nigerians to a restaurant, or you go to a festivity. Everybody is asking for rice. Give me rice, rice, rice. And rice has little or no nutritional value, okay? So when I look at the skin of Nigerians, you see really that they have very little nutrient from their meals. This contrasts with what I see when I go to a place like Kenya, or like Uganda, where people have, where people eat plantain, they have beef, they have pork, they have, you know, in those countries they actually have sources of protein, right? And in Nigeria we just sometimes just eat rice, you know. And you said, so what are you going to eat? Rice. Madam, give me rice without, you know, meaning without any protein. And so all it does is to fill your stomach, but it gives you very little. So when you see Nigerians, there's a scrawniness to their looks, which I would hope that some experts in nutrition would begin to talk to Nigerians that there are things we have, there are vegetables we have, there are other things that we grow. Even yam is a lot better. Coco yam is a lot better. than this rice that is, and the kind of rice that they eat in Nigeria is over processed rice, which is the worst form of rice to eat. But you know, so but
yeah.
Let's say 140,000 for a cat, the disposal of a cat's body. It just struck me that that will feed a family, I think, for 2 months, wouldn't you say?
No.
You don't think it's enough?
Things are expensive in Nigeria. Family or even for things are expensive. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've watched videos. So what ends up happening like in America, like in the pandemic, you saw, if you went on YouTube, you'd see a bunch of videos on how to survive on $20, how to make dinner on $15. You watch videos, I watch videos, cooking soup with 5,000, cooking soup with 10,000. I have watched a lot of these videos. Mm-hmm. And you see the quality of the soups and how long they could last. Now, you're looking at possibly rating on 60, 70, maybe 200. You're looking at, if it lasts you 2 months, they are eating once a day.
Mm.
For sure. And, let's just make some words. If you're nutritious, I mean, you know what pressure cooker is, man. If you're nutrition is with rice and tomatoes, it would even that is terrible, but I'd even last year, but the family would even fall. So it is terrible. I'm not talking about being the economy service,
but America, just hold that thought, right? But look at it this way, that there are people, messengers, drivers, and so on, whose monthly salary is 30,000 naira. That's all. I mean, of course, in our society, because you ask how do people manage, we have a society where the oga and you know relatives and so on give you maybe several times your monthly salary, because it doesn't make sense, right? So if you say that 140 won't feed a family for 2 months, right, there are people who have only 60,000 in those 2 months, and they have children and they pay rent and they buy clothes and they do other things. So how do they manage on that?
That's your question. How do they manage? How have they been managing all this year? Which is exactly what I'm telling you. Look, Obasa just stabilized the economy. Some people, you see somebody sell his house here, it is, and you think. But the vast majority of people are living like this, 80, 90%. How do they survive? When you run Nigeria, what's the first thing that starts happening? How you doing now? That's how they survive. How they survive. So they beg, they wake up in the morning.
The nation of beggars. There was a point you were making, I'm sorry that I.
You know what's happening, you know what's coming, you know it. From top to bottom, everywhere, everybody. You know, location, where do you live? How much do you need to survive? What are they doing outside of work? Some people are farming, some of them, they are starting and selling barley. Or, they are road sellers, their kids are road sellers. You take a look at road sellers in Lagos, don't have farmers that work. So, I remember there's a song back in 1999, Tribesmen. Oh, man, it's a very sweet song. If anybody can find it, you can understand it. It says there are plenty things we're not supposed to happen for this life. Mm-hmm. Plenty things. Plenty trouble. My people, plenty wahala. We're not supposed. In that sense, there's so many things that shouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. And the beginning of that song is a guy living in his house and telling his guard or gate man, it's in Nigeria, the person that watches his gates, their gates. Obviously very cheap to open the gate. And his wife, his son is coming and he's trying to question his son. And then the wife is like, dad's like, yeah, and the wife is like, why are you selling him? They said, look at him, daddy, if you had done well in life, you wouldn't be opening gates. And he starts facing his son, his wife, and whatever, she's going to go south. So what's very interesting is back in 1999, 25 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. If you go, it's very funny to me. Mm-hmm. It's been, I'm pointing it out that even in the advent of democracy, I see this kind of inequality where if you read the history of the world, most countries collapsed. All these kind of things. Yeah, most countries collapsed in that list. So, you know, exactly what you're saying. It's just, you're looking at the economic realities. I mean, ask you an idea, what should... should we leave aside the fact that the man said he made sure he divided the country, his tribe, and all that, and then said, yeah, but that this is what he wants. And I'm like, why didn't you do my rocket science? So I had to tell you that somebody, you know, to have the equivalent of, you know, PPE, you know, PPE is like the post-test cost. Mm-hmm. But I've done all those, you know, I've done a lot of the economics in undergrad, right? So it's like, okay, what you should do is make sure your supply of dollars is more than your demand.
I'm talking about the supply of dollar. I was actually speaking to somebody, again, a Nigerian businessman. I don't know how solid his information is. And he was saying that part of the problem is that the Buhari administration actually took in advance the oil, earnings and spent it. So, in other words, very little is coming in because Buhari just called up future dollars and just squandered it, essentially. So if that's the case, how come Tinubu has not said that to Nigerians? How come nobody in the Buhari administration Buhari himself, been asked to come and answer for that disastrous policy, if that happens to be the case? But, you know.
Look, there's some... But it's not exactly that. There's some distinct to it. In terms of they borrowed money overseas, they couldn't borrow anymore. They started printing money. And the thing about printing money, I'm like, I laughed. I said, look, in America, America prints money and makes the money disappear. Mm-hmm. If something is valuable, if you have a watch, how does this work, right? If you have, I'll use an example. If you can produce your fingernails, your hair, and your hair grows every night, and you can make your hair disappear, and people want your hair all over the world, right? Like people buy this human hair and stuff, right? Just an example. You probably kind of heard it, even the last thing they do. So if you have the kind of money that is not desirable, how do you make it desirable? Would have been the question by the administration. He never did. That was the first thing Ambassador Joe came in and did. So I say, look, you're looking at things. I look at, yes, Ambassador Joe, you know, there's this whole different conversation. There was a passenger. Did he do? One of the things he did, again, it's there. People go on TV every day and say these things. One of the things he did was simply stop supply. I love the hell of the show of supply. Face all the people that were doing exactly what Governor basically was in finance. What he was saying is actually accurate. Mm-hmm. They were printing money, artificially keeping the price of the dollar low. And then when they got the allocation, they all changed the dollars and took it out of the country. What they're about to do, they chased Abacha and everybody, Paul Maguma, all these people, and brought them into the enemy bank. Now, so you can never do that.
You know, and this came to me You know, yeah. That seems.
Wait, where are you going to get it from? Pay back money from where? What kind of company them bailing out? Okay, yes, the German chancellor jumped into Nigeria. Oh, you know, I want to get away from Russian gas. What he can, but that's a very different conversation, too, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to build me a pipeline. The only chance of you building a pipeline, the first thing you want to do is to get a flight in the air. So now, flights going to Nigeria come up. So for those who don't know how Nigerian airspace is, Nigeria sits starting at the end of the Sahel into the Atlantic Ocean, right? If you go into Africa, go look at West Africa, go kind of look at the map, please. And right on top of Nigeria, touching the whole of northern Nigeria, after one of many things, the reality that Nigeria covers it.
Yes.
So when you fly to Nigeria, among other things, you fly from Europe, you're flying through there. Now, if you're flying to Nigeria, you have to fly through like Senegal, and that's one of many. Even in northern Nigeria, have a cultural affinity with both of Nigeria. You don't even know this. Why are you putting it away from Nigeria? My man, you can't fight these guys. You know what? Who is this? Toro,
I think actually that was Tinubu in his early days seeking legitimacy with the West, because he knew that his the way that he got to power in Nigeria had profound question marks. So he liberalized the economy to the applause of the West. They say, oh, yeah, this guy is doing well. He's removed oil subsidies. They clap for him. You know, he set the value of the Naira to the dictates of the market. They clap for him. And so he said, hey, we're going to go and stop coup d'etat in neighboring countries. So when in the eyes of the world, in the eyes of Nigerians, your victory is a moral coup d'etat, the moral equivalent of a coup d'etat. So that was, as an American friend of mine would say, a laugh a minute. You know,
I don't think it's a moral. I think it's a coup d'etat. What a coup d'etat! Coup d'etat is somebody that takes part.
Yeah, we associate a coup d'etat though with somebody carrying a gun and so on. In a lot of ways, that the last election was a disaster in that sense, because it was every aspect of it fell short of a democratic process, every aspect of it. And I'm sure that, you know, it's getting to time when you said you must run.
It's very interesting with this, but anyway, it's just when people are like, look, man, they said the lowest hanging fruit is what they are looking for. Igbos, Hs, CBN, probably the one they're battling.
Yes.
I remember last one day, somebody, a friend of mine, part of their government called me. I'm going to go with him.
Yes.
I said, okay, I keep going.
Yeah, let's see.
Let's see what it means. You're chasing. All of us, we love the country, I went to school, and again, you know, going to school abroad is just what it is. You climb a plane and went somewhere. It doesn't mean you learned anything, really. It doesn't matter. You know, at 19, you went to the UK, went to America. It doesn't mean you learned anything. You know, you know that you came out with at least a certificate. But that doesn't really mean you learned anything. It's like, if you need people to, where is it taking you to? So you have this situation where Abbas is going to do this. That's it. I thought the Abbas left the problem was that making people believe that the system could work, you know, just trimming around the edges. But the reality is, he didn't change those things, make your Naira more valuable within the country, make the, you know, strengthen some things in the country here and there. The people started building private universities, there were less people sending people overseas, there was less people, properties in Nigeria appreciated, more people keeping their properties, more people around. You are making your, you know, trying to build some industrial capacity. You brought in, really, that's why, you know, some Yoruba, they like, oh, this is some of them, I don't like him, but you brought in the competent people. within that framework, they knew what they were doing, and they worked very well. Mm-hmm. They worked very well, trying to increase value, trying to make it more valuable. Mm-hmm. It was brutal in some cases, but I don't know, which leader is not brutal? Show me which leader. The only leader that is not brutal is one that's going to kill. If you are brutal and you are delivering, I mean, everybody needs to divide. That's a practical question. Don't pass certain boundaries. Do what you want. Wear your bikinis here and there. Some places, Singapore, wear your bikini, drink your beer. But, you know, behave yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't forget. Everybody wants to live. Europeans can't live in their cities. If you have people, you go on YouTube, Google, I ran away from Sweden. I can't wear my $2 million watch in Sweden. I can't wear it in London. It's true, but you can wear it in Dubai. So you create this environment. Mm-hmm. That's what people want. Mm-hmm. Most people are not interested in the government with you. I'm going to quote world to do a thing, property prices, the stability, I know what's happening. I can send my kids to good schools, educate them. But yeah, Ken grew. His wife divorced you and collected $2 billion in divorce settlement from you. I don't think anybody cares, man, which is what happened in Dubai, right? So a lot of these guys reflect for these things and just the basic things. I said, look, watch Nigeria TV, they have all these guys, they come on the rise, channels, everybody, and you know, I tell you, it's the same thing. It's very funny that people sit down and people, I tell people, I say, guy, you're now, you have more money, you have more purchasing power. I say, first things first, I live in America. My problem is here, right? But if that's what your problem is, what you're thinking is that, I tell you about my house going to Nigeria has more than 10 people. Mm-hmm. Everybody is now paying you for need. Everybody. Mm-hmm. So it's for me.
Same here.
In Nigeria, I think you want to be living on that course. Man, I want to land at the airport and people are sending 3 limousines pick me up and the marshals and the helicopters. I want to land at the airport and I have to take so many things. Did you just come from America now?
Anyway, such a delight, a bracing conversation, and thank you very much, Mecca, and thank you especially to our followers, to our listeners, to our fans for staying loyal, and we are really, really grateful that you are there, and that's why we are here also. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Offside Musings podcast.
All right.
And out.
Out.
Yes.